Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's easy to sell love cheap. A new collection of essays on love from the popular radio series This I Believe cuts through the commercialism and takes a candid look at what love really is, what it means. Romantic love, yes, and more. What it teaches us, how it inspires, and the ways we choose to express it, from the magnificent to the mundane. This hour on Point on Valentine's Day, what we believe about love. You can join the conversation underneath the hearts and kisses. What's it really mean? What has love taught you? Are you hardened to it? A true believer? What do you believe about love? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Louisville, Kentucky, are Dan and Mary Jo Gedeman. Dan is executive director of This I Believe, a nonprofit that engages people in writing and sharing essays describing core values. Essays from the program aired on National Public Radio from 2005 to 2009. Dan and Mary Jo are co-editors with John Gregory of a collection of 60 essays on love from public radio listeners around the country. It's called This I Believe on Love. Dan Gedeman, welcome to On Point. Great to have you with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Mary Jo Gedeman, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate having you here, Mary Jo.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So if you take the 50s, when this started with Edward R. Murrow, and just this last decade, when so many more surged in, how big a chunk of what people wanted to talk about on This I Believe, Dan, constitutes love? You know, was love a big topic?
Love is a very big topic. I can just speak to our contemporary series. Since we started airing on NPR in April 2005, we have received just about exactly 100,000 essays from listeners from all over the country and, in fact, all over the world. And when we sat down and started to look at themes that people had written their essays about, the number one theme that people had written essays about was love. And then when we looked at the people coming to our website, which, by the way, is thisibelieve.org, and we looked to see what were they reading, because we have all of those essays posted on our website,
right,
the number one thing they were looking for were essays on love. So we figured if people were writing about love more than any other topic and reading about love more than any other topic, it might be a good place to start with this project that we're doing at the moment to anthologize essays around a particular belief.
Mary Jo, what about the range of approaches to love? It's not all kisses and Valentine's here. It's not all romantic love. There's a big range of approaches to love or angles on love that your essayists take.
Right. When we started looking for essays, at this level, we wanted to find essays about love, what love means to people, but not necessarily the Valentine's Day thinking of love. We're not thinking of love with all the fireworks and that sort of love, but what love truly means to all of us at a foundational level. And so we have found that a lot of these essays are about love for your friends, love for family, love for places, love for humanity, love for pets, love for teachers. And so we've tried to have a wide scope of selections here to show what essayists have told us what love means to them.
Of course, right in here, you still do have that love that rides on a kiss, some very long-lasting kisses here. You've got one great one. We'll hear some excerpts throughout this hour from the essays presented in This I Believe on Love. And we've got one here from Scott Solomon. His parents, MJ and Patricia, are now in their 47th year of marriage. Maybe a lot of our notions of what love might be get started watching our parents. Here's Scott reading from his This I Believe essay about his mother and father at the door.
My mother and father kiss, she inside the house, he outside. Their lips touch through the door's opening. The kiss is sweet and sincere, something to look forward to, though it marks the moment of his leaving and her staying. My father is a swing shift man, so the time the kiss occurs varies. One week, he works 8 a.m. to 4 p.m., so the kiss happens at 7:15 a.m. The house smells of fried eggs and Folgers, a swing shift man's fuel and farewell scent. He leans inside toward my tiptoed mother. "Call me," she says, like clockwork. There are bridge tickets to buy, a river to cross. An aluminum plant awaits him. I'm 45 now, yet I replay the kiss often. Though it lasted barely an eye blink in real time, it is a timeless kiss. My parents still maintain a solid marriage. It's a tough act to follow. I've made missteps in the minefields of love, but the reassurance represented by this remembered kiss always returns. I still believe in that kiss.
Scott Solomon, he still believes in that kiss, the kiss of his parents at the door with the smell of fried eggs and Folgers coffee. Dad headed off to work, and it goes on and on. Mary Jo, there's no small attention in the essays in this collection to long-lasting love. And the point Scott makes right there is that many of us carry whatever that parental relationship was, good or bad, sort of hovering over us as we try. And as he says, he's made his missteps, but he keeps, you know, he still believes in that kiss, whatever he's found in his own life.
Right. It's so powerful. It's really wonderful. I think a handful of the essays in this book speak to the being a child and watching one's parents, or wanting to be a parent who has strong love for a child. And there's another wonderful essay in this book about a woman who has a baby who she says that her heart breaks over and over again every time she looks in her child's eyes. So the parent-child bond is really very strong.
Parent-child. If I remember that essay, she describes what she felt when she was still in the labor bed. Now she was sort of overwhelmed. And I think this was Rachel Wegner?
Yes.
She says, I believe love is not a big enough word. 9 months ago, my first child was born. The moment the doctor placed her on my chest and I smelled her scent, felt her skin next to mine, felt her heart beating against me, my heart broke. She goes on, tears rolled down my cheek, sweet, salted drops of a new kind of love. She wasn't prepared for it. Dan, people find all kinds of loves here, and in her case, that sort of shock of seeing something bigger than she imagined open up, even though it wasn't her first relationship in life, obviously. She's having a baby there.
Well, I think any of us out in Radio Land or here on this call who are parents have experienced that. I certainly did. We have 9-year-old twins, and I remember vividly that day. And I don't think I was any more prepared than Rachel Wegner was for the intensity of that love. And it's just a different kind of love that one has for a child than one has for a spouse. And, you know, there are several essays in this book that make that distinction between those two kinds of love. There's actually an essay in the book where an adult child is writing about talking to her parent when she was little, saying, you know, who do you love better, daddy or me? And she said, well, honey, it's different. I have to love you. You're my daughter. I choose to love your dad.
You know, there's such a range. It's a choice, and the child has to kind of take that on board. You love me by relationship, by blood, and dad by choice. I'm struck in reading these at how, in a way, you self-select here for believers in love. I mean, after all, they're chipping into this, I believe. If you look out across the whole landscape of what people have said about love over time, you know, you've got some real cynics out there. H.L. Mencken, love is the delusion that one man or woman differs from another. Or here's one from Miguel de Unamuno, love is the child of illusion and the parent of disillusion. So you've got some real, but then on the believer side, Picasso said love is the greatest refreshment in life. Gandhi said love is the strongest force the world possesses, and yet it is the humblest imaginable. You all draw believers by definition, I guess, Mary Jo.
We do. That's the bedrock of this organization and this project, is that we ask people to write a 500-word essay about what they believe, their core belief. And so we have not asked these essayists to write what they believe about love. We ask them to write what they believe. And so love is at the foundation of their belief, their personal belief, and they have told us wonderful stories about it.
Did you all learn something yourselves here? You're man and wife. Did you get a little guidance from this big pile of love essays, Dan, Mary Jo?
Well, I'll just speak for myself. It certainly was a wonderful experience and a very affirming experience because we had to read through hundreds of essays in order to pick out the 60 that ended up in this book. And just being that marinated in love for several weeks, and really months, because then we had to edit the individual essays with the essayist, couldn't help but have an effect on my viewpoint on love. And I think one of the key things that comes up again and again in these essays, and I think it's the part of it that I have resonated with the most, is the notion that it's all well and good to say you love someone. That's, you know, it's very easy to say those words. But it's a far different thing to walk your talk and to act upon that love and to do the actions of love. And a lot of times that requires sacrifice, it requires compromise, it requires patience. And every one of those virtues, if you will, are written about in these essays. And it's often the thing that couples find wanting in each other, but also that they celebrate in each other is the presence of those things.
Dan and Mary Jo, please stand by there in Louisville, Kentucky. It's great to have you with us. The new book is This I Believe on Love. We're going to hear from a lot more essays in this hour. We're hearing from a lot of our listeners already. WB says, love is not the roses and the chocolates, the wine and the moonlight. Love is visiting her mother, watching football with him, caring for your sick spouse, doing it because you want to. Brenda says, love is wanting him more than you need him. She's maybe onto something there. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Nothing you can see that isn't shown. There's no way you can be that isn't where you're meant to be. It's easy. All you need is love. All you need is love. All you need is love. Love. Love is all you need.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about what we believe about love. We're looking at essays from the long-running radio series This I Believe, Essays About Love. Two of the co-editors are with us, Dan Gettiman and Mary Jo Gettiman, who along with John Gregory have gone through a big mountain of essays that all kinds of Americans submitted for the long-running This I Believe radio presentation. It's out in a new book called This I Believe on Love. They're joining us from Louisville, Kentucky. One of the things that emerges in these essays is that love can be complicated. Here's one, an excerpt from the This I Believe essay by Louise Gray, and she's reminiscing here about a man she almost married, his imperfections and the way his love still fuels her, even though they parted ways many years ago. Here's Louise Gray.
He was arrogant, stubborn, ambitious, opinionated, and absolutely irresistible because he adored me and loved me unconditionally. While planning an autumn wedding, my sweetheart told me he expected me to be an obedient wife, to observe a 6 o'clock curfew every day, and to make our home in his bachelor apartment decorated in red and white, his favorite colors. I gently protested, but my favorite color is yellow. Can't we use yellow as an accent, like some pretty pillows? His quiet voice bellowed a resounding no. So after some serious soul searching, I told him, no, I will not marry you. Cancel the wedding. He was mad and sad. I was relieved and sad. He later married and I moved on. And yet, I never stopped loving him and using his love like a battery booster whenever I needed to rev up my courage or soothe my sagging spirit. His love was unquestionable, persistent, everlasting.
Louise Gray there reading from her essay in This I Believe on Love. Mary Jo, I loved the complexity of the picture that emerges of love here. I mean, here's no cancel the wedding, and yet there was something in the time that the sparks did fly there, that their relationship was on, that she never stopped taking sustenance from, even though he was long gone. It's amazing.
It is amazing. I think maybe for those of us that this resonates for, it might be because we've had those sorts of relationships early on in our young adulthood, and sometimes true love later on is more meaningful because you have these types of love that may have sparks and may be brief bursts of passion, but are not true love. And so it's a very strong essay. A lot of people have really commented on the truth behind this essay.
Or it's interesting, Dan, it may even be true love, but it's true love that's not sustainable in the real world somehow. He likes red, you like yellow, and there's no crossing that bridge.
Well, I think that there's any number of, you know, of loves that one might have in the course of one's life, but it may not be necessarily loves, as you say, that are sustainable. And I think any number of us, myself included, you know, can point to relationships that may have had something going for them, but not enough. And I think that those of us who are lucky enough to find someone that has the right stuff, as it were, in order to sustain a long relationship, knows the difference between those two. And I think a lot of the essays in this book speak to that, you know, there's a wonderful essay in the book from a 15 or 16-year-old boy who's got this huge crush on a girl in the class. Both of them have been assigned to write this, I believe, essays.
Yeah.
And he's writing his about her. And he's trying to get the gumption up to cross the room and introduce himself to her, even though she doesn't yet know that he has feelings for her.
Oh, every boy knows that's a big chasm to get across, the gumption to let her know. Wow. We've got all kinds of response here online. Barbara says, love is wanting the very best of everything for the person you love, regardless of how it affects you. Jason says, love is work and dedication. It's never easy, but it's the most rewarding and fulfilling job you'll ever have. Lucky if it works out for you that way. Musami is calling from Tewksbury, Massachusetts. Musami, thank you very much for calling. What's love to you?
Hi. I just wanted to say that I have been married for 12 years, and we don't celebrate Valentine's Day, but my husband remembers to record my TV shows when I'm not at home, and I always remember to record his sports or cricket or whatever it is, though I'm not interested in it, when he's not home, and I know he's going to miss it. So to me, the relationship is all about that and not about flowers and anything on Valentine's Day.
But it's actually doing this. He'll record your TV shows when you're not home, and you'll record his cricket match. That's great. There's one in here. Let me see if I can find it. It's a great one about hands. Yes, from it maybe goes to what you're speaking of there, Musami. This is in the This I Believe on Love. Here's a bit from the essay by John Samuel Tiemann. He's a widely published essayist and poet. He almost goes to the religious, or he does go to the religious here, but it's not just about a feeling. It's about what you do, that love is found in the hands, he says. Let's listen.
I believe that love is not found in the mind or the heart. Love is found in the hands. Love is in the nightly back scratch I give my wife. My wife kneading dough, that's love. Love is in the hand that crafts, sculpts, sews, caresses, soothes. That's where God is. That's where God is the most obvious, in the hands. In my religion, Roman Catholicism, the hands of the priest are especially dedicated during his ordination. If I could, I would sanctify the hands of everyone. I would bless the hands of the nun who teaches the child to write. I would bless the hands of my wife as she emails to me a joke. I would sanctify the hands of the clarinetist as she plays the Mozart concerto. I would consecrate the hands of the carpenter who shaped our simple dinner table. I would bless the hands of our dinner guests. I do believe in a love that sails the Caribbean in a honeymoon yacht. But just now, just this day, I have come to believe in a love that begins when my wife gently awakens me, because God is in her hand, in the hand that caresses my shoulder in the morning, the hand that encourages me simply to open my eyes.
Love right there in the hands, where something is done. It's not just a feeling, where it's something done and done for someone. Cassandra's calling from Elizabethtown, Kentucky. Hi, Cassandra. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi.
What do you know?
Well, to me and my relationship, love is going downstairs when it's cold in the morning and turning on the fireplace. It is emptying the dishwasher or picking up the mail or doing things like that, doing everyday things to make things easier for your partner, not because you have to, but because you want to.
And what about the hubba-hubba part, the romance? Does that sustain the cranking up the fireplace in the morning and getting the stove going, are they related, Cassandra, for you?
Well, they give me that that feeling that someone has thought about me in the simplest of ways. And it's not things that I've told them to do, and it's not things that I've asked for. And that knowing that someone thinks about you on those simple things and that it's spontaneous, that kind of is the, I guess, the hubba-hubba.
Yeah, absolutely. That is sturdy, and that is real, and that gets the stove warmed up in the morning. I appreciate your call, Cassandra, very much. Let me get one more right here. Peru, New York. Mike is calling. Thanks, Cassandra. Mike, you're on the air.
Yeah, you, Tom.
Hi, Mike. What do you know about love?
Can you hear me all right?
Yes, sir, loud and clear.
Okay, great, good. I'm a little fuzzy on this end. I was just going to go back to the Greek definitions of agape and phileo eros. And the way I'd heard it was agape was a mother's love for her child. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you look it up in the dictionary, it talks about God's love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a child cries and she doesn't know what's wrong with them. She has to figure it out, and she just looks to that problem, and she just it's an all giving love.
Mm-hmm.
And then Eros supposedly would be the child on the reverse, and there's nothing wrong with me. Give me, give me, give me. And of course, then also that's considered sexual love, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Also later on, in
sure.
And then there's phileo, and phileo is basically Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love, and the helping hand to each other, you know, and just being friendly and saying hi when you're walking down the street, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So
Mike, it sounds like you've got some experience of those three. Where, you know, how do they balance in your life? Have you had them all? Do they all still sustain you?
Again?
Have you had all three? Do they all sustain you?
I've experienced all three. I was taking care of my mother, and she had bad Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
And she was just really tough in her old age, and you know, those demented hallucinations.
Sure.
She stole the car one time, and, all sorts of crazy stuff, kind of, and when she died, I couldn't cry. And it went on for about a year, and I was sleeping in my bed 2 weeks before the anniversary of her death. And I had a dream, and I was a little baby, and she was holding me in her arms. And it was just, I remember as I started to wake up, I was nuzzling my into the pillow as though it was her. And crying, and
you finally had your
off and on. I had to go to work at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Pretty much cried until noon time. So you know that was experiencing that agape love for my mother.
Mike, I'm glad you found that, and we're all grateful to you for sharing that. That's as real as it gets. The caring you gave your mother, and then finally able to feel it after her passing. I mean, Dan and Mary Jo, I was struck by how much in here is focused on people really sacrificing for love and not, you know, in some ways the farthest thing from cheap Valentine love. Nothing against it. It's beautiful. It's fun. It's wonderful. But there's some deep sacrifices and commitments described in these essays as well, Mary Jo.
Right. There are, of course, and he touched on so many things that love is about, and about loss and about deep commitment and sacrifice. And, you know, the young love, when we think of Valentine's Day love and the giving of cards and flowers and chocolates, that's maybe how you define what love is when you're young. And our office manager received flowers this morning in the office, and she was quite delighted to receive them. And I was delighted for her to know that they were, you know, lifting her up and making her feel wonderful on Valentine's Day. For me, you know, I probably had that wish when I was younger. Oh, I hope I get flowers, or hope I receive something. It's just that now love is so much more than receiving flowers on Valentine's Day. And when it's nice that we set aside one day to remember love, but love is in the everyday and is in the sacrifice of every day, putting another before your own needs. And it's just very, it deepens what love is as you get older, I think.
Of course, a little kiss or flower never hurts. Rupert Brooke said, a kiss makes the heart young again and wipes out the years. Let's go to Jason in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Jason. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. I have three brief things to share with you.
Mm-hmm.
For me, one of the biggest lessons in love is to understand how I am loved by a parent, by a partner, and perhaps rise to how they feel and see me, to be better than I might think I am, but to learn from my beloved. One of the second thing is one of the most erotic, not only erotic, but deep expressions of love, mm-hmm. while I was watching a movie and I realized in my own life, is holding hands, even more so than a kiss or a more physical, perhaps, expression of love, is that incredible tenderness and expression that comes from that. And the third is the amazing journey that I'm involved right now in caring for my mother, who's going to turn 88 soon,
mm-hmm.
and not being her parent as much as finding in me, in a deep way, what will benefit her most, and that comes from the lessons that I learned from them, not doing the same things, but like how deep and
yes.
how much it's about her, my amazing mother, rather than about what I think is best for the occasion, but what will be best for her.
Jason, I love all three of those, that what we learn from another's love, the simple hand-holding, and then, again, here's this really giving to others. It gets deep right there. I appreciate your call. Let's hear another of these essays. This is from Cindy Lawler, essay, about her partner, happens to be another woman, caring for one another. Here it is, a bit of it. Let's listen.
And then I met Greta. She was not my first love, but she is my great and lasting love. When she endured the physical and emotional turbulence of addiction recovery so that she could be more engaged in our life together, she married me. When I confronted the inner demons that made me use words like knives in an argument, I claimed her as my spouse. We hold each other's best self to the light so that we are better daughters, sisters, citizens, and friends. We're middle-aged now. Greta's back is bad, and I grind my teeth at night. Old age stands just over there at the edge of our woods. But we will walk into those woods together, no matter what. I believe when we die, we will die married, for better or worse. What else could that possibly mean?
There, Greta and Cindy Lawler, they celebrated 24 years together as a couple last year. You get this thick and thin theme again and again, Dan. People really, if they're able to put down that commitment and stick with it and find, you hear in almost all of our callers today, that the satisfaction right there.
Absolutely. And by the way, the Cindy and Greta love story had a happy ending there in Massachusetts. They were wed last year, actually 2009. I was struck by so many of the things your callers have said, the woman in Elizabethtown here in Kentucky, mm-hmm. and then the essay that you played a little bit of from John Samuel Tiemann about the God being in the hands of his wife. You know, and I thought about kind of combining those two. You know, is the concept of grace. You know, it's undeserved. It's unrequested. But you have it nonetheless from the people that you love. And I think that that's a beautiful expression of love, whether it's Cindy Lawler or any of our other essays.
Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about what we believe about love, looking at essays from the long-running radio series This I Believe. Dan Gettleman is with us. He's executive director of This I Believe. It's now a not-for-profit. Engages people in writing and sharing essays describing core values that guide their daily lives. 100,000 essays they've got under their belt now, and they've pulled out a great collection of 60 in a collection called This I Believe on Love. He and Mary Jo Gettleman and John Gregory are co-editors of this new volume, and we've been hearing some wonderful excerpts from the essays there. And, I mean, people come to it with all different approaches. We're hearing from believers, and, of course, they're the ones that write the essays. Cynics are out there, too. The old French proverb, love makes time pass, time makes love pass. Or James Baldwin, about how we find ourselves and others in love. He says, love takes off masks that we fear we cannot live without, and know we cannot live within. Pretty great stuff. Let's hear a little more here. Here's one from Dan and Mary Jo and John's collection. This is from Reg Stark. He was born in Beaumont, Texas. He and his wife, Linda, were high school sweethearts, married for 43 years. She passed away, and here he writes about how he remembers her.
Linda, my wife of 43 years, lost her courageous battle with cancer over 6 years ago. And ever since then, I've been finding a penny almost every day. Whenever Linda found a penny, she would put it in her shoe for luck. If I saw one, I didn't think it was worth the trouble to bend down to pick it up. Linda was known for her generosity, acute pragmatism, and tuna salad. She was a caring, doting mother to our wonderful son and a loving, devoted wife to me. She enjoyed a good, raunchy joke, had a bawdy laugh, and could demonstrate a sailor's vocabulary whenever her Irish was tested. We all watched as she deteriorated over a long, agonizing 6 months, in and out of surgery and chemotherapy, without a complaint or a hint of self-pity. She finally succumbed one evening just before midnight in a home she loved, surrounded by her friends and family. Someone told me that angels leave pennies to remind you they are with you. I think that first penny was a pat on the back for getting those bills out on time, for a job well done. All the rest have proven to me that Linda is still with me. Yes, you could say that I'm now penny-wise.
Red Stark of out of Beaumont, Texas, about his longtime love with his wife, Linda. A lot of people spoke about this. Jane Martin wrote, the young believe in young love, the Romeo and Juliet kind of love. It's all wild and impetuous, skyrockets and roller coaster rides. She wrote, I believe in old love. Dan, who stands up to give you an essay for this, I believe, whether it's on love or anything else? What do you think it is that's brought so many Americans over so many years to say, I want to share the way I feel or the way I see this?
Well, you know, I've thought a lot about this, why this has resonated so much with people. And I think that people are given so many different opportunities to express themselves, especially online. You know, they can tweet or they can post something to their Facebook profile. They can write a blog article. But there's something a little bit more thoughtful about writing a This I Believe essay. A lot of times people tell us they go through 4 and 5 drafts before they finish what they have to say. A lot of people, we have one lady, it seems like every 6 months she sends us another essay and each time says, no, this is the one. I've finally figured it out. This is the one. And she sent us maybe a dozen essays. So I think that it's the fact that these are not off the cuff. These are heavily thought about. I think that's what distinguishes them from some other ways of expression that people have before them. And what people tell us is that in the same way that for some people writing a journal is really transformative and you learn some things about yourself that you might not have otherwise known, over and over again, people have told us that in writing their This I Believe essay and in going through the process of trying to discern what is truly important to them, that they are transformed by that process. And in some cases, they come to realize that something is so important in their life that they need to perhaps alter their life a bit to take action on the basis of that belief. And maybe that's changing a career. Maybe that's changing how they treat their children or their spouse. And again, to sort of walk their talk.
Mary Jo, so in a way, when you write down what you believe, it becomes a kind of a challenge or goad even to oneself to live up to it, I guess.
Right. We have heard so many times on our submission form online, there is a space for people to share with us reflections on the experience of having written their This I Believe essay. And in that space, we hear so many times, I have been trying to write my essay for 6 years and I finally was able to put it on paper. Or someone will tell us, I've been thinking about this for 5 years, but it only took 15 minutes to write it down when I finally got ready to do it. It is something that I think a lot of people look at this as their own personal credo. And of course, people have more than one guiding philosophy of life. You can write stories on probably a dozen. But we're asking people to do something very important, very foundational, and at the same time, we're asking them to limit it to 500 words. So many people find this a little intimidating, but we think the exercise has value just to start it, just to think about it. And this is one of the reasons why we provide curricula on our website for teachers. We have curricula for middle school, high school, college, and lifelong learners to guide people through the process of thinking about one's beliefs and then how to tell the story about it. So it is something that we hope that those tools help people through the process and to find it not that intimidating. And if they don't like their first draft, of course, they can start another one and they never have to tell another soul about it if they feel like it's too intimidating. But we do hope that they'll put it together and send it to us.
Dan, yes.
I did want to mention to you that your fellow Bay Stater, the late John Updike, he was one of the earliest folks that we asked to write an essay, and he said that it was one of the most difficult writing assignments he'd been given in his years as a writer, precisely because he was forced to sum up his beliefs in such a short period of time. So a lot of people tell us it's the very brevity that is the difficult part, to try to pick that one, tell the story, and tell it succinctly.
And it's not just any old thing, and it's not just off the cuff. You're having to write what you really believe here. That's really nailing your flag to the mast, isn't it? It's hard to step away from that. And when it comes to love, I've got to think that must be one of the tougher things. I mean, looking at this, here's another wonderful line here. Gandhi again said, "A coward is incapable of exhibiting love. It is the prerogative of the brave." And to write what you believe about it must take, it's not like writing about, I don't know, good work ethic or patriotism. Right. It's really personal. Dave in Amherst, New Hampshire, thanks for calling. Dave, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for having me.
What do you know, Dave?
I just wanted to tell you about the new love that I found with my girlfriend.
Let's hear it.
So she planned this huge trip for us to Boston, and we love going into the city, so... she planned this big trip where we'd go to museums during the day and then a nice fancy dinner at night and end off the night with a show. So no sooner had we gotten into the city than I started to feel ill. And we had to cancel dinner. And I went to the show but felt horrible the whole time. And I didn't want her to know because I didn't want to ruin everything. And we got back to the hotel. And I was so sick I couldn't get out of the bathtub. And she sat by my side and cared for me all night. Mm. And there I kind of found a new love that wasn't just the sweetheart love when things are good. I found the love that I know she'll care for me whenever I need it, and especially when I need it most. And there's no one else I'd rather depend on for that.
So even when you were a wreck in the bathtub, she was still there for you, Dave.
Yep. And I love her so much for it.
That's a catch, man. Hang on to that one. And thank you for that story. Let's get one more. Virginia Beach, Virginia. Judy, you're on the air. Judy, thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you for having me on. I wanted to tell you that as of Valentine's Day this year, my husband and I, Will, have been married for 31 years. It's been a great ride. We're an interracial couple, so it hasn't always been an easy ride.
Yeah.
But this fall, our daughter and son-in-law introduced us to our first grandchild. He was 2 days old when we met him. And when I held him, I found an entirely different kind of love. And there were absolutely no words that I could find to whisper in that little boy's ear to tell him how I felt.
Judy, what was the difference? What was the difference there between when you held your own child in your arms and now holding a grandchild? Was it different somehow?
Absolutely different. When you hold your own child, you have all these wonderful thoughts, but at the same time, there's this great responsibility to raise a good child and a happy child. With a grandchild, you don't have the level of responsibility. All I have to do for that little boy is love him like no one else can love him.
Just pure sweet love.
Absolutely unadulterated, no holds barred. love.
Judy, enjoy it. That's a great, great report, and I hope you enjoy it all the way. Thank you so much for that. One more, Karina in Haverhill, Massachusetts. Karina, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I have disabilities, and I'm in severe pain much of the time. My dear, sweet husband acts like I am the greatest person to be with. He brings me a hot cup of coffee in the morning when he knows I feel like hell. He brings me ice packs, and he brings me heat pads, and he takes care of business when he knows I can't.
Yep.
And I, on the other hand, even when I'm in too much pain to eat it myself, I make sure he has a hot dinner. And, you know, always rise to the occasion for the people I love, even when I'm in severe pain, like my children and my grandchildren. I really think that a lot of love is about everyday heroics.
Boy, Karina, I'm sure you are so right, and what a blessing that you've got it there. But are you still in a situation where you feel you can give back for all that he's giving you? It sounds like you do, like you can. You can still get up and make that dinner.
Yes, I do, and that's what, you know, it's love that makes that possible. There's times when I can barely move, but, you know, I care so much for him, and I care about his comfort, and after he's worked a long, hard day, I want to make sure that he has a nice meal to eat and someone to hug him when he comes home and act like they're glad to see him. You know what I mean?
Sure,
that's
Karina.
What love really is.
You brim with it. What a wonderful voice. I don't know what you're up against, but you brim in the voice, Karina, and it's great. I appreciate your call so much. Here's one from Meg on Facebook. She says, love is feeling safe enough to be your true person and to ask yourself and your partner to be their best. As a kind of challenge, Mary Jo, to the self and a lover within the love.
Right. Your caller touched on something, another essay that's in this book about illness and doing for the other what the other cannot do. It's very poignant, I think, to be there for someone and to know that that person is there for you. And I think at its core, that's, for me, a definition of love is to know that someone is there for you, loves you unconditionally, will always stand by you no matter what. And, you know, the deeper you get into a love with a romantic love, and especially if there are wedding vows attached to it, one understands that the vows that are so brief, but the vow to love, honor, and cherish, all three of those words are so important.
Mm-hmm.
And especially cherishing someone to show that you really care about someone deeply. I just think it's a beautiful thing.
They trip off the tongue almost too lightly, but you're right. All three of those have a huge amount of resonance. I want, while I can, and I'll come to you, Dan, but I don't want to get one more essay in. These are so moving to hear. You referred to this one earlier about, this is Jessica Mercer Zare, who, when she was a child, asked her mother if she loved her or her father more. You'll hear the answer she got there. But then she also goes on to look at that kind of deep commitment. Let's listen.
I once asked my mother if she loved me or my father more. Certain I knew the answer. Me. Instead, she bent down and looked me in the eye, hands gently on each shoulder. She explained that she couldn't help loving me, and that the love of a mother for her baby was incredibly strong. But then she told me the love she had for my daddy was a love of choice, which made it extra special. Of all the people in the world, she chose him, and he chose her. Now that I'm married, I consider each day what it takes to stay married and in love, as long as my parents have. It's not that I don't believe in romance and the extravagant spontaneity of last-minute weekend trips, or witty conversation over champagne brunches. But I believe more in love that is sustained by deliberate kindness and the choice to see little acts as testaments of love and commitment rather than indicators of a spark that has died. Of love communicated each time he cooks oatmeal and I schedule his dental appointment. This picture of love is certainly less exciting, but decidedly real, and in its own way, more romantic because of the weight of its reality. So in the small silences of our predictable, boring day, I choose him, and I choose love all over again.
there from Jessica Mercer's there. Sometimes it's dancing on moonbeams, and that is absolutely terrific. Sometimes it's the weight, the very weight of the reality of it, Dan, that makes it real. And that comes through again and again in the essays you've got here. Woody Allen said, I was nauseous and tingly all over. I was either in love or I had smallpox. but I think in here you've got people really opening their arms in what they believe. They go to the deep end of the pool real quick.
Yeah. You know, there's an essay in the book that sort of combines the two things that you were talking about, the last two essays. It's from a woman named Jenna Greer, who talks about observing her parents and specifically observing her father taking care of her mother, who was getting through breast cancer and all the chemotherapy, and couldn't stand to be touched because of the chemo. So he got a little mattress, and he would follow her. If she was sleeping on the couch, he would sleep next to her on the floor. Wow. And just seeing that level of sacrifice, how that informed what she would, A, want in a spouse, and what she would want to do for a spouse. So anyway, before I go, I just want to say, by all means, we encourage any of your listeners to send us their essay at thisibelieve.org, and perhaps we'll feature them in our next book.
That sounds terrific. The new collection, and we're so happy to get its depth, the weight of its reality on this day, is This I Believe on Love. John Gregory, Mary Jo Gettyman, and Dan Gettyman, co-editors. Dan, Mary Jo, thank you very much. Thank you so much for
thank
being with
so
us.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Just terrific. We'll go out with Etta James. Never does us wrong. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.